to Headlines. This is David Lichtenstein for an hour of learning, Hashgafa, and our virtual yeshiva, Yeshiva Shalmaila. This week we have a fabulous, interesting program, family planning for purposes of finances, maybe psychology, mental health, physical health, having children. Do you always have to have children? How many? What are the halachas? We will have Hagoyin Harav Herschel Shechta, the Rosh Yeshiva, Rabbi Yitzhak Elchanan. He's also the Paisig for the OU. All your kashrus comes through his psak. We will have from Chicago, Harav Shmuel First, the Paisig of Chicago. From Baltimore, Rabbi Moshe Hauer, very erudite, well-spoken, beautiful, sweet spoken Rav. We will have the Shita of Chabad, which is Hashkafa Shita, the views of what the Rebbe of the Chabad was, from Rabbi Schmerling. I would like to add a disclaimer here. Notwithstanding that we have such great Talmidei Chachamim speaking about this topic, it's appropriate to ask your local Rav and not the Paskin from a podcast, radio, etc.
We did a lottery last week, and we have the winner is going to be Yaakov Berger from Passaic, New Jersey. We want to thank all the people who called in from Zurich and from Gedalia, from Melbourne and from Manchester and from Israel and from Los Angeles and Miami. It's really quite an astounding, the reach of the internet today is just astounding. But again, Yaakov Berger of Passaic, and we're going to send him out his prize this week.
I would like to say that in the future weeks, we will be ceasing our radio program. From, you know, we will not be on the radio. Our lottery shows that we have had far greater listenership on the podcast, on our website, on the all the electronic, the new mediums. Like it's 90%, 95%. So we will be migrating just to an electronic and, of course, the phone version. I want to read a letter that I got a while ago to my business email. Somebody got a hold of it, a girl who's a listener. And I think it's a powerful letter, and it's very time appropriate. She writes like this. I grew up in, I'm going to take out the name of the community, I don't want to impugn any community. When I graduated high school, I didn't want to go to seminary in Eretz Yisrael because I get homesick, I'm a homebody. My parents said I had to go because I needed it to do a good shidduch. So I went to seminary. I didn't particularly like it. I got homesick. After seminary, I came home, and I got a job. I worked for 2 years. One day, my mother comes home. She's all excited. I was read to a boy from a, quote, prominent family. Oh, she was shining. What a shidduch. What she didn't say between the lines is, what the neighbors are going to say. What a good example it sets for my younger brothers and sisters. Wow, it's going to elevate us to a new level. I went out with the boy. He was a nice boy. Wasn't particularly my type, but my parents were so proud. All my friends were talking about it. So we got engaged. The wedding had to be in an expensive place because it was a prominent family. My parents couldn't afford it, so they borrowed money, and I contributed the savings I had from my 2 years of work. We now live in blank where my husband wanted to learn. So she writes, I went to a school I didn't want to marry a boy who wasn't my type and I didn't particularly like, had an expensive wedding with money we didn't have. I live where I don't want to live, all to impress people who I barely know and don't care about. Signed, her name, in prison for life. And then she adds on, can you talk about the importance, is it important to live for yourself, or is it only important to live for others? So I want to talk about this letter, and I want to say that, you know, we're coming up to Rosh Hashanah. The Yom HaDin is almost here. Okay, Zikaron L'Yom Rishon, we're supposed to go back to the beginning, Adam HaRishon, before Chet. So the Rambam writes something amazing. Rambam in Moiri asks, he says, it says that Adam was put into Gan Eden, Avdei L'Shamrei, and not to eat from the Eitz Hadas Toivara. So the Rambam brings from a Makshin who said, if man didn't know Toivara before he ate from it, so what was he, a behema? I mean, only a behema doesn't know the difference between good and bad. Right? What does that mean? Or he was the equivalent of a behema? Rambam writes, before the chet of Adam Arishin, we didn't know good and bad. You know what we knew? We knew true and false, genuine and fake. Good and bad, we didn't know. Because there's a difference. Even a child knows what's right, what's true and false, what's real and not real. You know, there was a boy who told me, a man who told me, that when he was a kid, he grew up in a very fancy community and his parents couldn't afford a car with air conditioning. So the whole summer they drove around with the windows closed, even if it was 100 degrees in the car, so that people should think they had air conditioning. And this man said to me, he said, you know what it taught me? That the most important thing in the world is what your neighbors think. So the Rambam writes, in the beginning, we didn't know. We knew emes and sheker, true and false. And what did Hashem say to Adam? He said, don't eat from the Eitz Hadas Tovara. Don't buy into that system of good and bad. It doesn't have to be right, true or false, right or wrong. It's what is good. Something could be very false, but very good. A loan shark could make a ton of money. He knows it's wrong. He knows he's hurting people. He knows it's false, but it feels good. Right? The school you want to send your kid to, you know it's wrong for that kid. He doesn't fit into that class. But, you know, how could I? I had a parent who said to me, a child said to me, when I went to a certain yeshiva, that was like a little bit for a different type of boy, my mother cried for 2 months. She was so embarrassed. Saddam writes, before chet, we knew the truth. And after the chet, it was what does society think. Before the chet, what does it say? The loyis by shashu. Adam Arishin wasn't embarrassed. They walked around naked. Why? What's there to be embarrassed about? Animals aren't embarrassed. It's real. After the chet, they had to cover themselves with begadim. It's not about what's real anymore. It's about layers and clothing and dress and attitude. It's not about being genuine anymore. And if you look at it, before the chet, what does Hashem say? B'tzelem Elokim. We were born B'tzalmai kids Musa. We were made to be B'tzelem Elokim. After the chet, what does it say about Adam? It says, Zeh Sefer told us Adam, B'dmus Elokim bara Isai. After the chet, the tzelem is gone. You know the difference between a tzelem and a dmus? A dmus is a photocopy. A copy of you run it through the copier, you have a copy. The first thing is long gone. What's a dmus? If it says by the Seres Hadibris, you're not allowed to make a dmus, a statue. The person is dead, the statue is here. A tzelem is Miloshin Tzel. If you're gone, your shadow is gone. It's directly connected to your reality. You can't have a tzelem without the what throws off the shadow, the penumbra. Right? In the beginning, we were connected to reality. And what does Hashem say? Don't eat. He tells us to every one of us, don't buy into the Tovara. Don't buy into the popularity. You have to get up by the appeal to say, give money to a cause. You don't have money. You don't believe in it. Your wife is going to be upset. She's not going to be able to get something that she needs for the kids that's important. But I felt good in Shul. We ate from the Tovara. Hashem says to every generation, don't eat from that Tovara. Say with that Tzelem Elokim. Don't date, don't send the kids to a shidduch that it's not for your kid, but I'm going to feel good. I have to live here in a house that I really don't want to live in because of the neighbors. The car I drive is because Beryl drives a car of the same type. Don't lead a life of imitation with your neighbors, your parents, your friends, your Rosh Hashiva, your Rebbe. Be yourself. Be a Tzelem Elokim and not a Dmus. And where does the tikkun start? Who is the first tikkun after the chet of Adam? Well, we know that Adam stands for Isis, Avram, David, Mashiach. It starts with Avram. Mi heir mi mizrach. Right, Avram. What does it say about Avram? The first Jew. Kol ha'olam me'ever echad. Everybody's with one crowd. Crowd think. Following the masses. Social pressure. Peer pressure. Go with everybody. What does it say about Avram? Vehu me'ever hasheni. Avram was on the other side. And you know what the great Rebbe said? I heard this from the Beis Yisrael, the Ramash from Chabad. He said, it's true, the Jew is from the other side, on Madaf Unfeif in the ganze Welt. But he wasn't just talking about us versus the Umis Olam. He's talking about you. I'm doing this because of my neighborhood? No, I'm not doing it. I'm going to do because I'm a Tzelem Aleichem. And you know what the Shofar is supposed to do? Uru Yusheinim Eshinaschem. Wake up. One time a year, we should think, when I was a child, what did I really believe? If I didn't have to live up to my neighbors, what would I do? I would do things a lot differently. Uru Yishenim, go back to that matzav of Adam. Learn how to say no. You know that the Baal HaTanya, by Yitzchak Avinu, the Baal HaTanya says, it says, before he benched Esav, he said, Asei li matamim, make me a smorgasbord. Yitzchak Avinu, he was a malach alekim, he didn't even live in this world. He post-arcaded, as Torah says, he came back to life with Tchias HaMeisim, he didn't even live here. He wants a smorgasbord. So the Baal HaTanya says, you know, he says, the Rabbeinu Shloilam, he doesn't want one type of service. Imagine if you went to a smorgasbord and pick your favorite food, yapchik, kugel, whatever it is, and there was a whole array of the exact same food, right? Fried chicken, stuffed duck, whatever it may be. You would laugh. You would say, this is a smorgasbord. So the Baal HaTanya says, Rabbeinu Shloilam wants matamim. He didn't want you to be like the other person. You have an absolute right to say, no, this is me. You know that the Medrash says that Avram, that Yaakov, Elu ha-melachem ha-shemolchu beretz edem, koydem aloich melach al-Yisrael, Yaakov Avinu bowed down to Esav 8 times, he said, Adoni. And it was the wrong thing, because he had every person has the absolute right to survive and exist the way the Rabbeinu Shalom created them. Asei li matamim, go back to who you were. You know, there was the movement, take back Wall Street, occupy Wall Street. You know what Rosh Hashanah is about? Uru Yishein Demeshinaschem, go back to Adam Rishin Kaidam Achet. It's occupy yourself. Take back yourself. Because you know what happens if we eat from the Eitz Hadas? You know what the klal is? The Eitzev Tel Dibanim. Your whole life you're going to be running around. Are my kids in the right school? Are they wearing the right clothing? Are they dressed as well? Are their labels as good as the neighbors? Did they get into the right yeshiva? Is so-and-so's kid getting better marks? If you eat from that Eitz Hadas, you're going to have the Be'etz Yitol Dibanim. And what does it say to the men? Right? Koitz V'dardar Tatzmiach. Your entire life, you're going to be a slave. Yes, there's different types of avdas. There's an avdas to what does everybody, all my neighbors, what do they think? Yiddishkeit is a language of authenticity, of truth. That's how it started before Chet. When you eat from the Eitz of Tov Ra, what others think, trying to please everybody, you end up worshipping Begadim. What does it say after the Chet? They wore Begadim. And that's the language of Dmus, not of Tselem. That's a copy. That's not real. So this Rosh Hashanah, what's that wish we think about? Break free of the Avdas. Taka b'shoifa gadol l'cheruseinu. Let's be free. Let's say, Pfeife on the ganze Welt. I'm going to do what I believe is an authentic. I'm going to go back to what I was as a child. And what do we say in the davening? We say, Haben hayakir li Ephraim. Yeled shashuim. What does the Rabbeinu Shalom want? He wants the genuine. When you looked with clear, innocent worlds at the world, eyes at the world, the child's look, what's true and what isn't. Not what others think. Do you know that it says that the story with Yosef, with Paitifera, Eshes Paitifera, happened on Rosh Hashanah. The Targum says it. Other Mekayim and Chazal say it. And what does it say about Paitifera? Vatitfaseyu bebigdai. She grabbed him in his levushim. What does levushim mean? What I wear, the clothing I wear to impress others. Nobody wears clothing. The whole concept of clothing is for other people. Right, you wouldn't buy that fancy dress suit, whatever it is. It's not for. She said she grabbed him in where he's affected by the chitzaynias, by other people. And what does it say? Vayana sachutza. He ran away, and that happened on Rosh Hashanah. What does our job say? I will return to the authentic me, not occupy Wall Street, occupy myself. This Rosh Hashanah, we should be able to say, I have reoccupied myself. I am doing it because I believe in it, not because of societal, peer pressure, etc. A good Gebench jar. Let's go to our guests. We have the great honor of having us on the phone, Hagoyin Raparashal Shechta. He's the Rosh Yeshiva of Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan. He's also, you know, a noted speaker, Paisik, and he's the halachic advisor for Kashrus for the OU. Welcome to the Rosh Yeshiva.
Thank you.
So, if you have somebody who was Mekayim Pru Ruvu, he has 5 children, this person had,
and he said he cannot afford financially to have any more children. He says, I work three jobs. I just can't afford it. Is there a heter not to have children if somebody can't afford it, or is a person mechuyev to have children regardless?
Meaning he already fulfilled period. He has a son and a daughter.
Yeah. He had five children. He had three girls and two boys.
Yeah, so it says in Shulchan Aruch, they quote the Gemara, La'er about Tanach Yadecha, there's a Midas Chassidus to have more than just a boy and a girl. But the Shmuel quotes on the Ramban and the Mohammed that La'er about Tanach Yadecha is not even a Chiyav Midirabbanon, it's a Midas Chassidus. So it says in the Ramah, if it's going to cause friction, if it's going to cause problems, so you don't do this Midas Chassidus. The Ramah gives a case, the fellow's wife died, and he can remarry and have more children, but he's afraid having more children will cause friction with the older children. There'll be two sets of children, those from the first wife, those from the second wife, and it'll be machlokes. So the Rambam says, whenever there's you don't observe a midas chassidus if it's going to cause friction.
And that,
yeah,
is that
can't
all,
afford it, isn't
that's even with a first wife, if he can't afford it, isn't
it? Yeah, same thing. There about time. So, I have nine children, Baruch Hashem. We would have had more also, but my wife wasn't able to. But it's a nice midas chassidus if he can live up to it. Sometimes the parents just psychologically, they're not fit to raise so many children. There's no mitzvah to have a lot of children and to let them grow on their own like wild Indians. The mitzvah periyah is to raise children properly with a proper chinuch. If you don't raise them with a proper chinuch, you're not doing the periyah. Just to have children and not to raise them properly is nishkan mitzvah.
I'm curious. Does the Rav have is that a riot to that? That if somebody has children and raises them like to be wild Indians, he wouldn't be Mekayim Puru Revu?
I think that's the Gemara in Brochus in the first Perek that Chizkiyahu HaMelech got sick because he didn't have children. So Yeshaya Novi came and he visited him. So he said, "You're going to die because you didn't fulfill." So he said, "No." He saw Baruch HaKodesh that he won't succeed in raising them properly. They'll be over the Avodah Zarah. So he told them, "Bahadi kapshe derachman Allah malach. You have to move. You're mechuyev to have children. You should have." So the three different interpretations that they give there. You look in the Yankif there. They have three different interpretations. So some of them say that the whole argument of Chizkiyahu HaMelech was incorrect. There's a mitzvah to have children, whether they'll be religious or not. And most of the Achronim say not so. Most of the Achronim say, either you're not allowed to pass Kinshala based on Ruach HaKodesh, or they told him that your Ruach HaKodesh is incorrect because Menashe, your son, is going to be Chayza B'tshuva. But the premise of Chizkiyahu HaMelech was correct. You're only out to the mitzvah if you think that you'll be able to raise the children to be Shomer Mitzvahs. The mitzvah of Peri V'Levi, Kodem Matan Torah, used to be required of Nochrim as well. Kodem Matan Torah applied to the Nochrim as well. And after Matan Torah, changed only to Bnei Yisrael. Why only to Bnei Yisrael? Because Kodem Matan Torah, the nature of the mitzvah is Peruv Umilus Haaretz, to populate the world. After Matan Torah, the whole nature of the mitzvah changed. Mitzvah is to preserve Yiddishkeit, to transmit Yiddishkeit to the next generation, that it should be transmitted weiter. But if he doesn't think he'll succeed in raising the children properly in Yiddishkeit, Shmiris HaMitzvahs, in the Menschlichkeit, and being a normal human being, not to be a wild Indian, so then he's not in fulfillment in the mitzvah period of Rivian. That was the shaila. Is there a mitzvah periv if you live under the communist and you know that you will not succeed in raising your children as an observant Jew? The communists will make it impossible. So if you can foresee that communism is going to collapse, is one thing. But you can't foresee. It took a long time till it collapsed. For many years, the people did not foresee it's ready to collapse. So the Pashto says that there was no mitzvah periv. Periv, you only yotzei. In Shulchan Aruch, they have the discussion. The Gemara says that if a Nochri had a son and a daughter, then he converts, so he's Yotze Piru Rivya with the children that he had been Nochri Yusa. So the Rambam says, Nizgayr Hu Banavimo, if the children also convert. So I think the Magen Mishnah says it's Svara Pshuta, if the children don't convert, so he's not perpetuating Yiddishkeit to the next generation, so he's not Yotze. And the Beis Shmuel quotes those who disagree. No, the Rambam meant, even if Nizgayr Habanim, if Lon is Gaira Abonim and they remain Nochem, then for sure he's Yotze the Mitzvah, even this Gaira. So he holds he Yotze the Beis Shmuel quotes those, Marami Prague, some others. They understand the Rambam that Yotze Piruvia with children are Nochem. So you're not, so he obviously doesn't agree with what I'm saying. He thinks that Yotze the Mitzvah, even if you're not perpetuating Yiddishkeit. But the Pashto says, like the Magen Mishnah, that the Rambam meant you're only Yotze Yiddishkeit, you're only Yotze Piri Rivya, if the children whom you give birth to will perpetuate Yiddishkeit. You're transmitting the Masor of Yiddishkeit to the next generation. That's Piri Rivya. That's why Lachamat and Torah, the Mitzvah only applies to Menei Yisrael, because the Baruch Hashem doesn't need any more Milus or it's to populate the earth. There were enough people in the world at the time of Matan Torah. So after Matan Torah, so the whole nature of the mitzvah is different.
So according to the Rav, if you can't afford it because you're Makayim Puravu, you don't have to do the Midas Chasidus. That's how you understand the Shulchan Aruch. Rav Moshe and Achuva says very openly, he says that if somebody was Makayim Puravu, he's allowed to use pills. That's what he writes in his Tshuva and Ebenezer.
Mm-hmm.
And additionally, if somebody's going to bring up children that are vildechayis, off the derech, dysfunctional children, that is not a kiyum of puravu either.
Correct.
So I have another question. We were asked, a newly married couple asked this question. They said that two questions. One is, the wife is going to school, and she has another year to finish college, or it didn't say OT, PT, well, with one of these degrees, and afterwards they'll have Parnassa, because he's learning. And if she gets pregnant before, and she won't be able to finish, and it would be an ma'akiv, the Parnassa.
Mm-hmm.
So he sent the letter. Is he allowed to wait a year to have children or not? Is ikuv of Parnassa reason to delay children or not?
Really, that's what grandparents are for. I belong to the grandparent team. And grandparents are supposed to help out with a little money or babysitting, help the children. So even if they have children, they should help them. But sometimes it just isn't going to work out like that. The grandparents are not in a position to help out. They live in a different city, whatever. So the Pashto says over here, she's postponing, the couple is postponing having children to enable the husband to learn another year. So that the Gemara says that you're not allowed to postpone getting married unless it's Lilma Torah. If the reason why they're postponing getting married, in the days of the Gemara, they didn't have contraceptives. So they're going to get married, they're going to have children, they're going to need a parnassus, so he won't be able to advance his learning. But today, we recommend you shouldn't have gotten married in the first place. But if they did get married and he wants to learn on, so then he should use some method to prevent her from becoming pregnant. So to postpone fulfilling Piri Rivya for the sake of Limud HaTorah, that the Gemara says is mutter.
So I would like to ask the Rav. I have a raya from a Rashi in Chumash and from a Rambam. The Gemara says that by the Kohen Gadol it says, Misha nata kerem v'leicha chilala yashuv lebeisai, Misha bana bayis, and then it says, Misha eris isha, Misha bana bayis. Like the Rambam, Rashi brings lamdach HaTorah derech eretz. First you should be Noita Kerem, then you should be Boina Bias, and then you should be Noisa Isha. So the Rambam seems, and Rashi brings it, the Rambam brings it, it seems that Puravush could be Nitcha for Nota Kerem and Bona Bias. Would that be a Raya or not?
Yeah, okay, it's a good Raya. Look, the Beishmuel in the first page of the Menezer raises a question. I don't remember, maybe he quotes it from earlier commentaries. He raises a question. Every boy who reaches the age of bar mitzvah should be mechuyev to do Piri Rivya right away. Let's insist that he should get married. So he says, no, it's going to ruin his whole program of leading his life. He has to learn. Torah matel. If Rabbi Chaim Tzarav, he asks about Torah, he's going to have children right away at the age of 13, so he won't be able to learn. So Piri Rivya should fit in with the rest of your life's program. So the same over here today. It could be that since people start everything later, they don't get a job until after they finish college, after they finish graduate school. So it could be that today you're allowed to postpone, even if the guy's not into learning. Maybe you're allowed to postpone to just to today. It doesn't fit in with the style of living. Could also be.
Now, is somebody allowed to space their kids if they feel that emotionally they can't have, today, you know, a woman could have a child every year. If she's not nursing and she could have every year, can she space the children for emotional reasons?
The Pashto said that, yes, look, we want the mother to be healthy so she can, even after they fulfill Piri Rivya already, they already have a son and a daughter. This is upgeret that you can postpone. I think the Chidah has like that in the Birkei Yosef and the first Simon at Ebenezer. But even before they have a son and a daughter, she has to be healthy. She has to be physically healthy. She has to be mentally healthy, psychologically healthy, in order to raise the children. So if she's falling to pieces, she can't deal with having so many children, so many babies in the house at the same time. So look, you want to have a healthy wife, a healthy mother, so you have to.
Well, thank you very much for your time, and it's an honor to have you with us. Rav Yeshiva, Rabbi Yitzchak Elchanan, Rav Herschel Shechter, thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a tzlacha. A good year.
A good year.
Bye-bye.
We have the honor of having with us from Chicago, Rav HaGoyin Rav Shmuel First. He's the Rav of Agudas Yisrael of Chicago. He is the Dayan of the Aguda, and he the famous Pesach from Chicago. Welcome, Rav First. So, Rabbi, first, we had on the phone, we had on the radio another Rav from Chicago, Rabbi Nachum Eisenstein, and he was asked the following question by, he was said, you know, what level does a person have to say, and you have this constantly, I just can't afford to have any more children. We're busting at the seams. It costs me $15,000 a year tuition, without going into chayvis, without causing great stress, for financial reasons, and solely for financial reasons, I can't afford to have any more children. I was Mekayim Pru Revo. He pointed out that Aruch HaShulchan seems to say this as a psak for a Moshe, and Rabbi Eisenstein said, there is not a single Rav in the world who would allow somebody not to have more children because they can't afford it. Would you agree with that statement?
100% I would agree with it. There's no heter not to have more children because of financial reasons. The Rebbein Hashem runs the world. The Rebbein Hashem takes care of everybody. The same Rebbein Hashem that supports someone with two children will support them with 10 children. So to use any type of not to have children because of financial reasons, I think it's connected our Messiah. If it's for psychological or physical or medical reasons, that's something else. But just because of financial reason, not to have any children is shaloi kalocha, and I heard this from a number of G'dayli Yisrael, and there's no one that I know that would be meiko for financial reasons.
Well, the Aruch HaShulchan says that. He says, if it's be'ein sipuk b'yadei lefarnasam, you should not have a... It's a reason, once you're
Pru Revo. Time at Aruch HaShulchan is a lot different than today. Today, Baruch Hashem, there are many means of getting government help. There was no such thing as support from the government in time of the Aruch HaShulchan. Today, Baruch Hashem, there are many people who are not making it financially. They get help from the government, and everyone knows there is help from the government today to help out.
And what would be, Rabbi Fritz, what would be, in other words, once you Mekayim Pru Revo, the reason to have more children is Be'erival Tanach Yadecha, right?
You have a mitzvah Rabbanu Be'erival Tanach Yadecha, correct.
Which the Beis Shmuel says is on Hagatayva, which is how he explains why if there's a katata, he says, shouldn't have children.
But most hold it's a mitzvah drabonon. Every time it's a mitzvah drabonon.
So the argument then is, and I believe Rav Moshe writes that if somebody can't afford it, they could take the pills. But if it's a mitzvah drabonon, don't we say, let's say, somebody going on government programs, God will cover that brias, that's doich alaysa say, but certainly a drabonon even become vase?
No. They should not go to Florida for Pesach. They'll have more money. Instead of spending $20,000-$30,000 going to Florida, they'll have the extra $20,000 to help pay tuition, help to pay the other bills.
But let's say the person doesn't go to Florida.
Doesn't make a difference. The person has to have betochen and rabbanu shalom. That's our Messiah. You have to have betochen, amun, and rabbanu shalom, and that's it. And there's no reason that a person should use contraceptives because they cannot afford it. The only reason we allow to use contraceptives is for physical or psychological reasons, and that's it.
Period. Well, wouldn't affording have to do with psychological reasons? It's going to cause stress.
No, it depends
on the person.
So they have to speak to a Rav. They should speak to their Rav, and the Rav is the one to decide, is it a psychological reason? Some men or women don't sleep at night if they didn't pay the bill. Some people sleep well if they don't pay the bill. Depends on each case. Separate. They should speak to their Rav. But it's only psychological or physical reason. Anyway, just for financial reason alone, is not enough of a reason to use contraceptives.
Rabbi First, it was a great honor to have you on with us. Thank you so much. We have on the phone with us, from Baltimore, Maryland, Harav Rav Moshe Hauer. He's the rabbi of B'nai Yaakov Shari Tzion, one of the leading Orthodox congregations in Baltimore, an erudite speaker, renowned for his hashkafa, his halacha. Welcome, Rabbi Hauer.
Thank you very much.
Rabbi Hauer, I want to talk to you about family planning. What's taught in many seminaries is a woman is supposed to have as many children as is physically possible. I got a letter from a woman. She said that she has 6 children and she's exhausted. And she went to a rabbi, I won't mention who, and he said, if you don't feel like you're going to have a nervous breakdown, you should continue having children. So both from a woman's perspective and from a man's perspective, which is more about, I just can't earn anymore. I'm falling apart at the seams. I have 2 jobs and this and that, but we could still have children. Give us a little bit of hashkaf and halach on this topic.
This is a very, very important subject and a very delicate subject. We can look at it now, certainly in the beginning of the 21st century, when we look at the situation of Klal Yisrael as a whole and the changing proportions within the Jewish community over the past 30, 40 years of the growth of the Orthodox community, which is to some degree from the fact that we want some neshamas back. But clearly, demographically, the growth of the large families, which many in the Frum community have, Baruch Hashem, been blessed with, has been literally the hatzolah, the salvation of Kol Yisrael. And the tradition, the very, very strong tradition of Meira Hera, which you see it both in written Shuvas and in the oral Masaira, which Meira Hera give over to their Talmidim, to other Rabbonim, which Meira Beim gave over to me, is to be very, very careful in this particular area of halacha, that one has to be conscious of what Chazal teach us about certain things of Ve'ein Meirin Kain, and being cautious about what we just, you know, say loosely, you know, publicly about this matter. And I try to be conscious of that as well. There is, however, a lot of concern, as you noted in your question, which is very well phrased, both in terms of physical strength and emotional strength on the part of the woman, and then emotional strength and financial ability on the part of the family as a whole, maybe a pressure perhaps felt acutely by the father, sometimes the unlimited family size, the potential unlimited family size, is not something which is sustainable. So one thing which I think is important to think about and to teach is an idea which I had heard it originally many years ago from Rosh Hashanah Hirsch, but I saw it, actually the Radak says it in Chumash, that the mitzvah of the Torah having children is expressed as peru urvu. We usually translate that as be fruitful and multiply. But what does that mean in the double expression of the mitzvah? Why didn't it just say peru, right? To have the fruit, to have the children. And the Radak says that peru is to have the children and urvu is to raise the children. That the mitzvah doesn't just constitute being able to have the baby, but it's as we know, you know, essentially a lifelong mitzvah, that even after the children are Baruch Hashem out safely and living and breathing, but the parents' involvement is still very, very much on. And a person has to be able to fulfill that mitzvah as well. They have to also be able to be present emotionally, physically, and you know, in every which way, to be able to see them through, to be able to see them grow up properly. So, completely considering, you know, only I would say like an emergency of a nervous breakdown, or a physical, absolute physical inability to be able to go on, the way Kibalti Meraboisai is not the measure. One has to use a measure which is a little bit more aware of being able to manage well and to be able to raise children well. That's on the one side. On the other side, we sometimes encounter, very often encounter, a sort of desire for some kind of a social or family engineering where a person will define exactly what they want to be able to provide, the amount of time they'll be able to provide, want to be able to provide to each child, the finances and the like, and to be able to design the family exactly to be able to match some kind of map of how we're going to be able to provide for every nuance and do it just right. And the truth is, as we know, Rabbeis Machshaves Belevish, we have many thoughts and ideas about how we're going to design things perfectly, but life brings its own bumps. And in the work of trying to raise children, we are supposed to stretch. We're expected to stretch and to extend ourselves to a significant degree. You know, the Rambam writes in Hilchos Deos that a person is always supposed to make sure to live within their means, except when it comes to providing for their wife and children, they to some degree stretch beyond their means. You know, so not in simple luxurious lifestyle choices, but just this is the nature. This is the nature of accepting upon ourselves Achrayus responsibility to raise a family and the desire to raise a family, that there is some stretching. And for us to try to limit family size to a particular projected budget of what we're going to be able to do is also not quite the path. Had we done that, we wouldn't be looking at a Klal Yisrael, which today, Baruch Hashem, has the kind of bracha and the kind of flourishing numbers that we do have. So these are some of the outside delicate considerations, you know, on this matter.
Mm-hmm. So I want to relay a question that, again, you may laugh at the question or you may think, gee, you know, but look, it happened to me in shul. I was, a few months ago, I was davening in a shul, and Rabbi Shiner Shul here in Muncie, and a fellow came in. He gave a clap on the amid, and he said, "You know, I have to marry off 11 children. It was somebody from overseas, and I am raising the money for the to marry off my child. He's, you know, my oldest of 11, or maybe the youngest of 11. I remember. And there was a fellow standing next to me, and he looked at me, and he says, are you a rabbi? And whenever somebody says that to you, you know you're about to be decked. And I just looked at him and he said, you know, we only had 5 children because I couldn't afford it. He said, tuition was strangling me. He's an accountant. He says, I don't make that much money. And I looked at my wife and I said, I can't earn anymore. And I don't want to take tzedakah. So we didn't have any more children. He says, now this fellow, he said he just had 11 children. He figured he would collect. And then he said, and I can't afford houses for my 5 children. And he's raising money for the houses of his 11 children. So he looked at me and he said, is that even tzedakah? Like, am I giving tzedakah, giving to somebody what I thought was irresponsible to do? And I'm not a rabbi, but I know that you are, so I could ask you the question.
The halacha teaches us that there's a din of de machsayre yasher yachser lai, and which means that when a person comes and is needing something which is their personal subjective need, so the obligation of tzedakah is to provide for that subjective need. And you know, the Gemara gives a much more astounding example than your neighbor in shul, and that is sus lirkavelev eved loritz lefanav, a person who is used to having a limousine and a driver, and now is not able to have it, and he feels the loss of it. It's an obligation for the person who is asked to provide it for him. Now, that doesn't equate with saying that the person shouldn't themselves internally, or perhaps with the help of their neighbor or their spouse or their rav or whoever it is that advises them, learn how to manage without a limousine. but that's not the job of the person who's asked to provide him with tzedakah for it. People have needs in the situation in which they are. And the shaila of tzedakah for people who come, who are in the situation of mishpachot bruchot yiladim, as they call it, families blessed with many, many children and who aren't able to meet the expenses, it's not our job on this end as individuals to look at this person and turn him away because of perhaps a mistake which he made some time ago, or even perhaps because of a societal choice in terms of the balance between having children and making parnasa, you know, that hasn't been made yet. Halacha teaches us that we're supposed to treat the person in front of us with the need that he has and with the need that presents. And I don't think that changes. The question which the person raises, which is not about whether you're going to give this person in front of you right now money, but whose choice in life was the better choice? Was the choice to, you know, to have the 11 children and who knows, we'll see, we'll go and we'll bang on the bima in the Beis Medrash in Muncie and get people to help us versus I'm going to have 5 children because I project that this is what I'm going to be able to afford. You know, I think that's the more fundamental question for us to, you know, to discuss and to consider. And, you know, there's likely a happy medium to be found, you know, somewhere between those two.
So what if that person did come to you and he says, you know, Rabbi Hauer, I have 5 children, my tuition is X, I'm already a Baal Chayv, and to have another child would put me into serious debt. How would you advise him?
So there isn't a one-size-fits-all answer to this question. And I would share with you the general guideline, which is the way, at least I understand this to work. Financial issues present themselves as in two different ways or two different aspects. One aspect is the financial issue itself. Do I have the money right now or don't I have the money right now? How is my budget working? How am I meeting my obligations? How can I project being able to meet my obligations? And the second is the consequences of financial stress on the parents' general well-being and their general coping, the way they generally are able to manage in life. And the second, meaning that if the financial stress is of the kind, and, you know, it's a difficult thing to be able to project. Nobody's a Navi. But you know, people have personalities about how they cope with different things and different stresses. And there are people for whom the financial difficulties are going to overwhelm. And there are people for whom the financial stresses are going to be a feature of life, part of life, and a manageable feature of life, and a manageable part of life. Just like the accountant struggles through tax season and has to stretch himself. I don't mean to make any kind of a simplistic or condescending, you know, comparison here. Please, you know, please understand. But, you know, sometimes people will, you know, work with challenges, and some people can't handle it. You know, because of that stretch, they're just going to have to go, you know, out of public accounting and go into private accounting because they can't manage a few months, a year of such tremendous intensity as is the life of a public accountant. They can't do without the break. They can't do without the sleep. They can't do with being on call. Not because they're lazy. It's just this is constitutionally, their emotional constitution is such that they're not going to be able to handle it. We have to be able to have a feel ourselves. Levi Odeya Moras Nafsho is an important principle here. And a Rav who's a Meiro Hero who advises people in these areas has to listen a lot to how the couple is coping with things in their lives right now in order to be able to figure, in order to be able to decide. You know, one thing which I would say is that very often the tuition thing is brought up in this regard. And, you know, for what it's worth, my very strong feeling is that people shouldn't limit their desire to continue to grow their family by a different desire, which is a desire to pay full tuition and not not ask for scholarship. I'm sure you probably have had many discussions about tuition and things like that, but you know, at least it is my understanding that tuition is at the very least a public-private partnership or a consumer-communal partnership, and it is not tzedakah. A person is not asking for tzedakah like an ani when they ask for scholarship assistance. A large chunk of the payment for the chinuch of the children of the community is the responsibility of the community. And people who are working hard and putting in their time and emotional energy and raising children and large children, they are not parasites when they turn to the community for the community to provide public education. These are people who are the very opposite of parasites. They're having children with mesiras nefesh, with dedication and sacrifice, and working very, very hard to have and to raise those children. And they're providing, if they're physically and mentally in a position to be able to do things right and to raise those children properly, they're providing the community with the richest and best of assets.
So, Rabbi Harrow, would it be fair to put words in your mouth? I apologize.
Everybody else does. Okay.
and make the following sort of very general rule with 100 iterations, that this with what Shadi Shulchan Aruch says, yesh sipek b'yadei l'parnasam, you have the ability to feed your children, you should have more, als be'erev al tanach yadecha, right, or the way it's bravur, you know, both Aruch HaShulchan and Ramesha Paskin, you would say, if somebody feels that by having more children, they have to either create very great stress, maybe lidei ktata, like the Shulchan Aruch says, or become a recipient of charity, then he would not have to. But taking going and handling on tuition, that does not rise to the level of charity, and that should not be a factor.
Yeah, I mean, I the term handling on tuition is not my favorite.
Okay.
It's not my favorite, but the person, you know, receiving scholarship assistance, which is, you know, even that term is beyond the taste. Again, the takon of Yeshua ben Gamla was basically that we're supposed to have public education. Now, again, it's not a new modern thing that people pay tuition. There's a long history of that. But again, it's a partnership. Yes, for tuition reductions, that is not a reason for a person not to do it. It would have to be something more extreme. I'm not sure if the way you actually described it would cover it all, but the second part I certainly would subscribe to, which is for a person to not do it because of the fact that they'll have to take some kind of tuition break and not pay the full assigned tuition, that should not stand in the way. Greater, very, very serious financial issues and stresses are a different story. They are a different story. But again, not a young couple projecting down the line, will I be able, I'm projecting this is how much I'm going to make, and so on and so forth. There is some measure of faith which we have to have over here when it comes to having children, and you see that is something which was said by Gedolei HaPoskim all along. You know, we have the Chazal, the baby comes to the world and the package comes with him. Yeah, and again, it's not, we don't completely just, we're not on a madrega to completely throw caution to the winds, but this is why there's a delicate place and a delicate balance. It's my place or our place to sort of, you know, smash the very, very strong precedent that this is a shaila which is asked, you know, carefully, privately. What I think a service we can do in having this conversation is encouraging people to have a discussion with you know, a responsible Maira Hira, to understand that it's not just have every last, you know, child your body can physically produce and to generate, that, you know, there are questions to be asked. We can't assume you know what the result should be.
Rabbi Sai, this is the wise Paisik and Talmud Chacham and Rav from Baltimore, Rabbi Moshe Howe. It was an honor to have you on with us.
Thank you, Rav David. I hope that our discussions are with us.
cultive. We have on the phone with us Rabbi Pesach Schmerling, who is a Chabad Rav, who deals with Taras HaMishpacha. He teaches Chasanim, and he's an expert in matters of family planning. Welcome, Rabbi Schmerling.
Hello.
So, Rabbi Schmerling, if a family would come to you and they would say, you know, we have Baruch Hashem, we will Makayim Puravu, we have a boy and a girl, and we just can't make ends meet. If we have another child, it would create a tremendous financial pressure. And I'm sure you get these type of shilas. Could you tell us, as a Chabad Rav, as a, you know, as an expert in this area, how would you paskin? What would you say?
In general, such shilas are not a one size fits all type of shila. It needs to be determined how much of the shaila is a current financial situation, how much of it is more a daige for the future, will I be able to get my children through college? In general, financial concerns on a basic level are not a basis for a heter for birth control. The basis for birth control heter is more when there is a health issue, if there's a danger in a woman getting pregnant, and it doesn't necessarily have to be sakonos nefashis, danger to life, mamish, could be, as many of the poskim, especially in the Achrenim, talk about that chulsha yaseira, strong weakness and things like that, and also mental health. If a woman is going to have a nervous breakdown, that's also something that can be grounds for a heter. But difficulties in parnasa is not on its own a reason for a heter, but sometimes the situation can be such that in turn can become a health issue as well, and that as of needs to take into consideration.
Now, what do you do with the Shulchan Aruch that says that anything that could be maybe lidei ketata or parnasa is a reason for birth control? How do you deal with the machaba?
The Lubavitcher Rebbe, Kufi Yagin Aleinu, spoke extensively on the issue of tatam, of family planning, mainly in the 1980s, Tafshin Mem and on. The Rebbe spoke not necessarily limited from a halachic perspective, more from a hashkafedige perspective. That from a Yiddishkeit perspective, a Yid is supposed to have a muna and bitachon, and of course it has to be within reason. So that's what I mentioned before. Sometimes parnasa can become a situation where it's just not possible. So when it's mamish not possible, the Rav will have to use his judgment, because if the whole home is going to fall apart, then that's not going to work. But at other times, it is just the Rav should speak to the couple. And by the way, I mentioned the Lubavitcher Rebbe's approach in this. The Rebbe himself has gotten many questions from individuals as well, besides what he spoke publicly on the topic. There were many times that people wrote to the Rebbe, said him that their life circumstances are such and such, and they want to know. So the Rebbe never responded exact to these people. The Rebbe always deferred them to ask a Rav Meira Hirav Apoel. You must go speak to a Rav. And in some instances, the Rebbe wrote clearly to a Rav who knows you and can sit down and speak to you to get the full picture, to make the determination if this is a situation that, yes, if it's going to bring to real ketata, and not just ketata, if the house is just going to fall apart and that there's not going to be food currently for the family, that is something different. But the daige, especially in today's day and age, usually, in most cases, people, and it's understandable, everybody knows limit tuition is high, and just life is expensive. So people right away think the bigger picture. You have been trained to look ahead and not to...
But Rabbi Schmerling, you have people, I mean, this is... It's been said in the in certain areas that the biggest form of birth control is tuition. I mean, you're saying that if somebody's worried about 10 years or 20 years down the road, will they be able to send their kids to college or seminary? That's not an issue. I think even the Shulchan Aruch. But when the Shulchan Aruch says Ein Sipek Biyadai, in other words, he can't afford it. If a guy says I had to borrow last year for my tuition, and I owe from 2 years ago for my tuition, and I owe 3 years ago tuition, you're not talking about future things. So the Shulchan Aruch, and you know, the Aruch HaShulchan is even clearer than the Shulchan Aruch. Ramesha seems to say this way, but if it's a parnasa reason where a person says, I don't want to borrow money to have more children, he wouldn't have to. So you're saying the Lubavitch Rebbe is not talking from more a halacha point of view, he's talking from a hashkafa point of view. Is that the message that you're saying?
This specific scenario the Rebbe didn't address to the best of my knowledge.
So how would you paskin it today? A guy says, I owe money to the tuition committee for last year, I owe for this year, I owe for 2 years ago, I'm going to Gamachs, I can't make ends meet, we have two kids, should I have a third child? They say, Rabbi Schmerling, you're the Rav of Taharas HaMishpacha, of Chasanim, what do I do? How would you answer?
It depends on the person's real matziv in Parnasa. Because
That's my matziv. I owed him for this year, last year, and 2 years ago. That's his matziv.
Yeah, but sometimes the way his lifestyle is, he should maybe make different decisions, and he'll be able to cover more.
You're saying don't go away for Pesach, and don't buy a new car, and pay
live
the tuition.
More, yeah, live more.
And let's say
more betzonua, and then he must have to do it.
If he does live a humble lifestyle, what would you say then?
I will not give a psak on such a thing.
Okay, it's too general. You're saying it's too general, and there are too many details that would have to be known.
Yeah, unfortunately, it's becoming more and more this scenario, and hopefully the Moses will relax a little bit on the tuition. That is an issue that Gdeli Yisrael and Rabbanim, not my caliber, should really address on a bigger level. Yeah, it's a big problem.
Now, Rabbi Schmerling, from a hashkafa point of view, what was the machshava, the hashkafa, what was the crux of the Rebbe's, of Lubavitcher Rebbe's point? Like, what was, you know, it's, this is what the halacha says, but I believe that we should have we are mechuyev and we should have more children. Is it because ein ben David ba'ad shetichla kol neshama shebeguf? Like, what was the chassidus behind it? What was the haskalah behind it?
The Rebbe spoke about different aspects when he addressed this issue. Ad sheichla neshama shebeguf, there was one thing that the Rebbe mentioned. The Rebbe mentioned that what is just the concept that is brought down, that besides for Pur Vumi de Reise, there's Lo'ed of Al-Tanach, to have more and many children. And the Rebbe spoke about Klal Yisrael, that especially after the Holocaust, we have an extra obligation to bring more children into the world. So these were different things that the Rebbe spoke about. But that's about having many children, about the aspect of family planning, spreading it out, taking breaks between children, and things like that. Let's say somebody says, I have no problem, I would like to have 10 children. I want to space them out every 2 years a child. So the Rebbe spoke about this inyan, that we can't choose when we get the bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And a person says, now I don't want it, I want it in a year. But in a year, maybe HaKadosh Baruch Hu won't want it. We don't have that control over what's going to be, and we might lose out on a bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we have to view every child that is born as a bracha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and with every child opens up a new simur for bracha and hashpah and also for panosa. That was the Rebbe's approach, especially about panosa. The Rebbe would always say, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu can be zonu mefanes kol ha'ilam kulei, he can definitely also be mefanes another child. These were different pointers that the Rebbe would speak about. The Rebbe brought a medrash that it says about Moshe Rabbeinu, that he said, Shlach no bi'al tishlach. And later on, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, when I wanted you to lead the Eden, you said, Shlach no bi'al tishlach. Now you want to go into Eretz Yisrael, now I don't want. And the Rebbe asked, L'cheir, it seems to be like a derogatory, negative way speaking about Moshe Rabbeinu like that. Why would the Medrash mention that? It seems to be like, as they say in Ivrit, Mishak Davka, Tulochis, against him. You didn't want now. As I never said, the only reason is because there's a lesson in this. And the lesson is that sometimes HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to give us a certain schus or a certain bracha. You have to grab it and take it. And if you say no, later on there might come a time where you might not be able to have that bracha.
That's very beautiful and deep. Well, Rabbi Shmuling, thank you very much for sharing the Messiah that you were Makabal from the Heilige Lubavitcher Rebbe with us.
I just want to just mention one other nekuda. Sometimes people take it the other way to an extreme. When there is a need for birth control, then there are heterim. So sometimes people have gone through a C-section or another medical issue, and they need to take a break, if it's for a year or two. And when people then say, no, but the Rebbe was against it, and they try to be super chassidish, that is incorrect, and that's not the Rebbe's approach either. The Rebbe actually had Yechidusen with Rabbonim over the years, and the Rebbe told the Rabbonim not to be over machmir when there is a situation that needs it. Then one needs a heter should be given. So that's
right.
Just another side to the picture.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Rabbi Shmerling. We greatly appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
Thank you.